Hello and welcome to a Petersburg Borough Assembly Candidate Forum. Today is Thursday, the 24th of September, and 2020. I'm Joe Vicnicki, the news director for KFSK. I'm joined by Petersburg pilot reporter Brian Varela, and online as well by the four candidates for two seats on the Borough Assembly. We have Brandy Tinas, Jeff Mucci, Dave Kensinger, and Mark Martinson on with us all. And the four of them running for two seats. This forum will last an hour, and it will be recorded and rebroadcast at a later date for those of you who aren't able to listen today. And we have sought out our questions from the public before the show. We'll do our best to include those. We won't be taking questions or comments live during this show over the phone. And we're going to take turns asking you questions of the candidates. We'll be changing the order of who gets to go first. Each of them will have 2 minutes to answer the questions. And a reminder, like other forums, you don't have to take up the full 2 minutes to answer the question, but you're welcome to. I'll have a timer going here and try to hold you to that two-minute time limit as we go through those. So, and I'd like to remind people that you're listening to KFSK. The election is October 6th here in Petersburg, and this is one of the contested races on the ballot that you'll see. And let's get started. We have four candidates here, and I'm going to take the first question just by asking candidates to make some opening statements, to introduce themselves, remind people who you are. There are new people in town who may not know who you are, your background, why you're running, and your interest in a borough assembly seat. And I will start today by starting with Mark Martinson. How about you start first, Mark?
Okay. Well, as Joe said, Mark Martinson. I was born and raised here in Petersburg. My great-grandfather, Nikolai, came to town about 1915. I started commercial fishing in 1978 until, about 10 years ago. I mean, I fished for everything. King crab, dungeness, salmon. Whatever was out there. The only thing I haven't fished for, I think, was shrimp. I've built and repaired just about everything down there in the harbor with my father's company. Repaired canneries, built harbors. I spent 5 years on the city council back in the 90s, right to early 2000s. And, that's probably enough, Joe.
Okay, sounds good. Let's put that next to Dave Kensinger. Your question, introduce yourself.
Yes, hi. I've lived in the Petersburg Borough since the early 80s with my wife and business partner, Mona Christian. We have owned and operated Chelan Produce for many years. I'm currently vice chair of the planning and zoning and vice president of the local chamber of commerce. The main reason why I'm running is because I feel that we have a pretty good thing going here in Petersburg. We have a really good quality of life, and I want to see that continue. I feel that one of the main reasons for that is that we've had a very professionally run city government or borough government here in the community, with our schools, hospital, and borough government. And I really want to see that continue. I feel that during the current COVID emergency, I've felt very safe and feel they've done an excellent job in protecting us and responding to this crisis. I think in the course of my travels and my business, I've been able to witness firsthand in many communities in the region what happens when divisiveness and acrimony occurs in the assembly level. I don't want that to see that happen here. I will work really hard if you elect me to listen to everyone, to try and give policy guidance to the professionals that are running our borough currently. I want to see what we have continue.
Okay, thanks. Let's go next to Jeff Mucci.
Thanks, Joe. Just a special thanks to the pilot and KFSK for putting this thing together. I think it's with the COVID thing and the Zoom meetings, it's a good opportunity to answer some questions and, you know, at least talk about what we have going on. My name's Jeff Mucci. I've been in Petersburg since the early 80s. Been married to the same woman for almost 40 years, which is a feat in itself. I have two kids who've gone through the school system here. Great moms. They're married to two wonderful young men. I'm very fortunate that way. I started out in politics as a Parks and Recreation Board member back in the early 90s, and I was on the Parks and Rec Board with Alan Richards, Donna Marsh, Pete Nielsen, and a few other folks. It was kind of my eye-opening experience to local politics. I was on the city council from 1990 to 1995, and I was the mayor from 1995 through two terms to 1999. I got appointed to the seat that I have right now in, I think, 2017, and I ran for office in the fall of 2017 and was elected to the seat that I have right now. I spent 20 years of my first part of living in Petersburg as a commercial fisherman, mostly in Bristol Bay. Like Mark, I've done crab, all the fisheries that we needed to do to kind of make ends meet. After about 20 years, I transitioned to work for the Department of Fish and Game as a research scuba diver, and some of my training was dive medic, a lot of medical training for underwater stuff. I spent some time as an EMT and in the EMS program, which is very it was valuable to me, some of the stuff I still use today. I'm a member of the Petersburg Marine Mammal Board.
Great, Jeff. Sorry I had to make you wrap it up there with a two-minute limit, but we'll get into a lot more. So next we'll go to Brandy Tinas, please.
Hi, Joe. My name is Brandy Tinas. I'm a lifelong resident. I'm fourth generation here. I grew up commercial fishing with my parents and then continued on for several years after, still kind of go longlining every now and then. I'm now an electrician at OBI Seafoods, not BFI. And I'm a mom of four, and that's about it.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for starting off. And Brian and I have a number of questions about the pandemic and COVID-19, as you can imagine. And we're just going to swap, alternate here with our questions and try to start off with different people first. So I will throw the first question over to Brian. The first person to start on this one, let's start with Dave Kensinger. So Brian, go ahead. It's yours.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me here. And thanks for everyone for tuning in and joining us here. And, you know, about an hour ago, I was thinking about the good old days when we'd be back in the assembly chambers in person, speaking face to face. But I guess we're doing our best to make it work. So I guess we'll just get right into it. Like Joe said, my first question I have here is about the pandemic. And it's going to be, in your opinion, what are some things the borough has gotten right? And what are some things the borough has gotten wrong with its response to the COVID-19 pandemic?
So first to Dave Kensinger, please.
Yes, I have been very pleased with the response that the borough's had. I mean, this has been a moving target from the very beginning. It's new territory for everybody. And I know some mistakes have been made, but I think they've been dealt with quite quickly. Yes, I support the current efforts and an ongoing effort. I know everybody in town feels that we're isolated. And we are, and we've been lucky. But I think on top of that luck, we've also had very good direction from the borough, the hospital, and the schools and how they're approaching the problem. And I assume they're going to have to continue on going on the track they are and deal with the problems as they come. And hopefully, as an assembly member, I don't have to get in their hair and tell them how to do their jobs.
Okay, thanks. Next up to Jeff Mucci, the question to you, what's been done right or wrong with the pandemic?
Well, there's a lot of stuff. Most of the stuff's been done right. One of the things I wasn't really happy about at the beginning of it is that I wish the city manager would have taken a little bit more stronger lead at the beginning. We heard a lot from the school administration. I don't know what the sequence of events were, but I would have liked to seen Steve take a little bit more direct role in, you know, getting our incident command program up and running. That's kind of like the big thing that, you know, I still think about. You know, the right thing, there's lots of right things. I mean, we've got some great personnel helping us through this. I mean, between the hospital, Phil and all his staff, and the people in the lab and the infection control people. And, you know, we got Carl Hagerman in place. I mean, I spend a lot of time thinking, well, if Carl wasn't the incident commander, who would I be comfortable with as the incident commander in town? And I honestly can't think of too many other people that I would be. I mean, I've known Carl since I've moved here. We spent a lot of time on the basketball court, and I trust Carl. He's done a great job for the community. I think we've tried to sort stuff out. I mean, this pandemic is making elected officials think in ways that we've never had to think before, whether it's trying to sort out where we're going to come up with all the personal protective equipment, giving away big chunks of money to organizations that and businesses that have been hit by the pandemic. I mean, I think, you know, Liz and the Economic Development Committee, I mean, I think we're looking at like $20 million when it's all said and done that will be coming into this community and has been given away to whether it's the school, the hospital, the daycare folks. I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, that is working really well. You know, we're just trying to sort it out. These are times that we've never seen before, and I hope we never see again. We'll get to the end of it here, but I'm pretty excited about we've got some key personnel in place that are doing a great job for the borough, and I'm pretty happy that they're doing the great job they are. Thank you.
Thanks. Next to Brandy Tinas.
Yeah, I think that we've been very proactive. I think that we responded well. I have to agree with Jeff that I think that our borough manager lacked in a little bit of leadership at the beginning of this. The one thing that I personally think that we have maybe overreacted as we've seen numbers change and information, more information, and we continue to to react like we did back in March when everything was very unknown. But for the most part, I think that we handled it well. Obviously, you can tell that with our numbers in town.
Okay, thanks. And finally, to Mark Martinson, the question, what's been done right and wrong with the pandemic?
Well, Petersburg, state of Alaska, United States, and the world totally panicked over this thing. You keep hearing these numbers. Well, just take the United States, for example. 3 million people a year die in the United States. And it sounds like a lot, but it's less than 1% of the population because more come in or born. So I think these numbers are totally messed up. We won't know that for another year, and people might kick back and go, what the heck were we thinking? This wasn't worth ruining an economy over. I mean, it's a perfect example of a person can be smart, but people are dumb, stupid animals. Sweden did it right. People say, well, they're more than Norway and Denmark. Yeah, but they're less than the UK, Germany. Half numbers are half United States. And it's, I don't know, Joe.
Well, Mark, while you're taking a pause here, I'll take a follow-up question here. And it kind of gets into the role of the municipal government, and this has been kind of the debate this summer. What is your thought about whether the local government should take any steps to respond to a health pandemic, regardless of what you think of the numbers reported worldwide? Should Petersburg municipal government be taking any steps to respond? Let's stay with Mark on that one because you're kind of going in that direction. So,
well, take example. We had the one fatality reported here, and
that gentleman was in Seattle, and the doctors gave him maybe a month or two to live when he passed away. You know, how many cases like that are across the nation? But it just got people in panicky mode. And, well, I mean, having the power to close businesses, private businesses, just irks me. It just shouldn't be that way. If the business wants to close, then they can do it. But, you know, talking about curfews and closing businesses and no gatherings, you know, no, it just isn't right. It's just not America. So all I got to say, Joe.
Okay, let's go next to Brandy Tinas with that question on the role of the local government. It should be taking any steps at all to respond?
Yes, I think that we do need to respond. I think that that's part of us as being leaders, is that we have to respond, especially when we've been declared, or it's been declared on a state and national level. That being said, I don't think that we need to be taking measures such as closing businesses either. Taking precautionary measures, making, you know, putting out information, all of that is something that us as the borough should do. But when it comes to, like I said, businesses and other things, I think that needs to be up to the people, and there needs to be some sort of responsibility for your own health.
Okay. Yeah. Next to Dave Kensinger on that question.
Definitely the city should have some authority to respond in these manners. My observation was that I thought it was a pretty measured response for the unknowns at the time. We didn't have a mandatory mask mandate. As far as I was aware of, there was no mandatory mandates to close down businesses in town. Of course, their operations were restricted on how they could operate. And I understand the impact that that has had. It had a great impact upon me, and through my work at the Chamber of Commerce, I know how it's impacted many small businesses in town. And I feel that the borough has done an excellent job with their new program that the assembly passed on giving relief to some of these small businesses in town. I think that's what needs to be done. And I hope that we can work as a community to help a lot of these businesses that are really struggling with this right now. I mean, it's a dire situation for a lot of small businesses in town. A lot of larger businesses are going to be fine, you know, just because they have more capital. They've been around a lot longer, but it's the small people out there. And I just want to encourage everybody in town, if you have an opportunity to support one of your local businesses, now is the time to do it. Now is when they need the money, particularly going into the winter. And we have to do that, or a lot of these places are just not going to be around come spring.
Okay, thanks. And a question to Jeff Mucci on the role of government in responding.
Yeah, I agree. I think the borough needs to kind of respond when emergencies happen, or in this case, this COVID pandemic. I don't think the borough has to respond specifically, but I think we need to have the steps in place, whether it's the instant command system or some type of organizational system that gives us the ability to, you know, marshal resources, make sure we get the community, you know, all the equipment and the planning that needs to happen. If the borough's not going to do it, there has to be some organized effort to kind of marshal the resources that the community has. I mean, people have talked about, they thought that this was borough overreach by the government. You know, for me, I look at it as borough oversight. I mean, I'm not telling Carl or Steve what to do. I'm just kind of, you know, I'm here as one of seven members of the assembly. If we're asked for our opinion, we get together and we try and come up with a consensus of how to go forward. But for the most part, the instant command system is set up to make decisions and move forward. And we talked about on Monday, we have the authority to kind of oversight and see what's going on. And if we don't like the way things are going, we can certainly step in and find out how we can change things. So, yeah, the borough has to have, you know, take steps to respond.
Okay. Stay on with us, Jeff. We'll have you answer the next question first. And it comes from Brian Varela with the Pilot.
Thanks, Joe. And for my next question here, Dave kind of touched on it already, but I'd like to hear what everyone else has to say. As you mentioned, local businesses are suffering as a result of the pandemic. And my question to you is, what ordinances or resolutions would you support or present to the Assembly to help business owners during this struggling time here?
Well, we just dealt with it. I don't know if it was this last meeting or the one before, but, you know, we put together or we identified $500,000 for the business owners in town to apply for and help them with, you know, lost revenue, whether it's for rent or taxes or employees. I mean, that's important, that $500,000. But what's really important to me is like the $65,000 that we have earmarked for the childcare component in town. Without a solid childcare component in town, the businesses will never be able to get back open to where they want to be. I mean, parents won't be able to take their kids to be educated at the school system or to go to a daycare or go to Serendipity. And the after-school programs are important. For me, during this whole thing, I've seen that the daycare thing is a real important issue. And there are funds around. Liz and members of the Borough Assembly and some elected officials have worked really hard to identify folks who might need the money, and they're working with them. But yeah, I think we're using this CARE money that we're getting from the federal government to help out in the short term. I think there's going to be some long-term implications here, but for the short term, I think the money is there. And we just passed, like I said, as of today, I saw a report that we've got $227,000 out there in applications for local businesses. So, you know, we're about halfway there. So yeah, I think the borough's doing a good job there. It's not just the borough, it's the city staff that's helping us get there. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Next to Dave Kensinger with that question.
Yes, Liz Cabrera worked with the chamber and with local businesses in town. And I think she developed a very easy program for businesses to sign up to. Anybody that's got a business that's signed up for any of the federal grant money or the Alaska CARES grant money, they probably have about as much hair left on their head as I do. But this was really easy. So I was really happy to see that. And hopefully it'll get some money to some of the businesses that need it right away. And I just want to say thank you to everybody that was on the Assembly for passing that ordinance.
Okay, thanks. Let's go next to Brandy Tinas with that question.
Yeah, I'm kind of going to reiterate what Jeff said. I think that we did do something to help out. I honestly am hoping that the hospital doesn't need the money that we set aside for them and that we can put more of that back into businesses as well as to help out community members, whether it's with utilities or whatnot. But I'm hoping that we can do more along those same lines. But I think that we've at least made a start.
Okay. And to Mark Martinson.
What was the question, Joe?
Sure. It was what resolutions or ordinances would you support to help businesses suffering financially during the pandemic?
Well, the best thing government can do for any private business is just to try to stay out of their way. You know, like I said before, mandatory closing businesses and that kind of thing. They set aside $65,000 for child care when the hospital may or may not need that $600,000. If you want to do something really for the citizens of Petersburg, put $200,000 or $300,000 into some kind of child care program, because it's expensive. I put 4 kids through that system, and that was a long time ago, 30 years ago. I don't know, 40 years ago. And But as far as businesses go, start giving money away when they don't need it, or they can apply or something, but just to stay out of their way. It's like this ordinance, when I read it a dozen times, and I said, you want to do what? You want to have the power to close businesses, eliminate gatherings? It just shouldn't be that way.
Okay, let's stay on the topic of coronavirus relief funding. And my question is about, there's about $300,000 by my last check of the CARES Act funding remaining. A couple of you have already touched on this, so what you hope to do with any remaining money. But let's dig a little bit deeper into that and start off with Brandy Tinas to top this one off. What would you do with that remaining $300,000 or whatever's left, including any unused money from the hospital?
Like I said before, I'd like to see it go back into the community. I think that there's people that are going to need assistance, especially throughout this winter, that have had a rough go of it, whether that's with utilities, whether that's, you know, I think Skagway, I believe, gave just a chunk of money to everybody. But it's some sort of aid. I don't think everybody is in that same situation. So maybe like a needs base, but I'd like to see it go back into our community.
Okay. And back to Mark again, remaining money for CARES Act funding, what would you do with it?
Well, I'd try to get to the people, like childcare, or there's lots of things you can do there. Businesses are floundering, and it's not going to be a good thing here coming down the line this time next year. It could be really ugly out there. I mean, Icicle Seafoods, or whatever they are now, they closed down early. They spent, statewide, $40 million was spent by the processors, seafood processors, and it came out of their pocket, $40 million. So that hurt fish prices. And anyway, get it to the people. You know, it's, you know, the hospital has all kinds of funding possibilities. You know, businesses and the people don't. But again, like I said, I think childcare let you free to go to work.
Okay. That's it. Thanks. To Dave Kensinger next.
I agree with Mark's idea on additional support for childcare. It's very expensive here in town. I also would like, depending upon the amount of money that's left, on a needs-based basis, paying utilities and possibly rental assistance. But whatever you do, it's got to be easy, because we don't have a lot of people in town that can administer numerous programs. But yeah, you need to get that money out to the people that need it the most.
Okay, and to Jeff Mucci.
Thanks, Joe. I think we should just hang on to that $300,000 for a month or so. I imagine between now and the end of the year that there'll be something that pops up that's going to need some immediate assistance. I think we're making headway in meeting the needs of the daycare and the after-school programs. I think we've got the hospital kind of lined up. I think we have the schools kind of lined up. We've got the business owners kind of, we have funds available for them. You know, for me, I just soon hang on to that money and see what pops up. I'm confident that something is going to come up between now and the end of the year that's going to need our immediate attention. And I'd feel a lot better if we had $300,000 just sitting there that we could respond to something, an emergency in town or some unforeseen need for this money. I mean, I'm sure the school could use more money. I'm sure the daycare facilities or the programs could use more money, but I just assume hang on to that money and then see what happens here between now and December. And as we get closer to that December 31st thing, if we don't have any need for it, then I'm sure we can distribute it to needy organizations and people in town. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Hey, Brian, I'm going to shake up the order here a little bit and stay on the COVID topic with one last question before we move on to others. And I'm going to throw in another question here. It's a real brief one, though, and it's just on public participation and in-person meetings. Should the borough be returning back to in-person meetings with public participation in person for the future meetings that come up? Let's start out with, how about Dave Kensinger on that one?
Yes, that's an issue that the chamber is dealing with right now. And we came up with, I think it was a pretty good solution. We're gonna allow people that wanna meet in person, and the people that don't wanna meet in person, then they can call in. We're using a different format than Zoom, but it's been working pretty good. So that way we're not saying to anybody, you got to come to a meeting if you're not comfortable with doing that. I don't see any reason why the borough shouldn't do the same thing. People who want to come in person, fine. People that don't, you can call in.
Okay, and next to Jeff Mucci with that question.
Great question. Hey, we talked about it on Monday. You know, Assemblymember Lynn talked about it, and I think it's been kind of on all the assembly's mind trying to sort out how we want to move forward. I mean, I think, you know, for me, I miss the in-person thing. I mean, I don't, you know, luckily we had the Zoom meeting, so I had to put a clean shirt on, but, you know, I miss that interaction at the assembly level. I miss seeing the body language when somebody gets wound up about something, or somebody's rolling their eyes, or somebody gets a text message during the meeting. I mean, I miss that stuff. You know, I've asked for this to be on the October 5th agenda, the discussion. I mean, for us to make it happen, you know, the assembly to make it happen, we have to repeal local health mandate number 3. And then we have several decisions that have to be made. We have to decide about if we need to have a quorum present in the chamber. We have to talk about what rules we're going to apply to members of the public that might want to come, or to the assembly. Are we going to do social distancing? Are we going to have to, everybody going to wear masks? What are we going to do? We need to sort that out. We have to decide if department heads are going to be there. And me, the biggest thing that's been bothering a lot of us for several months, even before the COVID thing, is how are we going to figure out and fix the audiovisual thing in the assembly chambers? It's just a mess. It's just a friggin' mess. And it's just like, you know, if people can't come to the meetings, they need to at least be able to hear it and see what's going on. So Steve told me earlier this week that they're on it. They're going to find a contractor to fix it. And that's going to be a big component of this whole get back together and start meeting. But I think people want to, you know, venture out and kind of see if we can make that happen. I mean, I'd like to see it happen. So, yeah, good question.
Thanks. And thanks for wearing a shirt. And next question to Mark Martinson, same question. In-person meetings with public participation in person?
Yeah, well, since it started, Joe, I think this whole phone thing has been totally ridiculous. You know, if masks and social distancing are the key, then what's the problem? We used to have it televised back in the late 90s, early, and so people didn't have to drive up there and watch. They could watch. I'll get that again, but let's put our big boy pants on and meet in person.
Okay, and to Brandy Tanis.
Yeah, I think that we should be going back to the assembly chambers, but I agree with I don't know if it was Dave or Jeff, it doesn't matter, that for those that are uncomfortable, they should be allowed to call in.
Okay, thanks. I think we're going to switch gears and get to a different topic from COVID. Next question goes to Brian at the Pilot, and let's have Mark Martinson start with this one.
Yeah, like you said, Joe, we're starting to move away from COVID-19 now, and we're going to talk about the Cake Access Road project over on Kubernoff. And, you know, the state funded $40 million for this road to connect Cake to Petersburg over on Kubernoff. And I guess my question is, do you back this project, or would you rather see the funds go towards something else?
Well, it's been in the works for 40 years. Now they're, what really bothers me about it is where they're going to end the road on this side. It's like 12 miles around the block here. Why are we doing that? But it's Kate could really use the power that we produce, and it would be a small line, and it would really help them out. But I mean, it's like say it's been back and forth for. I think the money was finally appropriated not too long ago, so they said, "Well, let's build it." But no, I support it. I just thought where they ended it was a little strange. But...
Okay, and next up to Brandy Tinas.
Yeah, well, for one, I don't think that we have a ton of say in it. And I also don't like where it's ending. But that being said, I do support it. I think that it will bring a lot of money and jobs to this town. And unfortunately, our Marine Highway is not what it once was. And things are going to have to change. And just like our end of the road, that was built with the intention of a road going up the Alcan. Now, that didn't happen. But I'm glad that we have it there. It's made it really accessible to go to Wrangell and to other smaller towns on the south end of, and I think that we're going to have to, things are just going to have to look a little different when it comes to transportation in Southeast, and it's going to, and I think this is a good start, and it also allows access to hydropower, and I think there's a lot of different benefits that can be, that can come out of putting a road there.
Okay, and to Jeff Mucci.
Thanks, Joe. You know, the road has all kinds of inherent problems with it. I mean, it's going forward. I mean, I want to make sure that all the communities want it. You know, I get mixed signals from the Cake Tribal, the other organizations within Cake. Some people want it, some people don't. You know, there are some people in Cake, I'm not speaking for them, but, you know, they don't want us over there moose hunting in their backyard. This is going to open recreational opportunities for people in town. I think where the road ends is on the Kuprinoff side is, it hasn't really been thought through real well. I mean, that's like a real nasty stretch of water out there where that boat ramp is going to be. It might be sheltered for a while, but to get from here to that boat ramp is that can be kind of crummy weather. I mean, if we're going to spend $40 million on a road and we're not going to spend it on the ferry system, then, you know, let's get something put together that we can use and make sure that the community of Petersburg and the community of Kuprinoff and the communities of, you know, the borough governments of Cake, they want it. If they don't want it, then I think we need to sort it out and figure out if it's gung-ho, we're going to do this one way or the other. Let's make sure that we can use it and it, you know, it's usable for folks. But you know, I'm sure we could all come up with a different way to spend $40 million at this point. I mean, I'd love to see it go to the ferry system, but we'll see how it goes. I'm not sure how many jobs it'll go for Petersburg. I'm all for making sure Sig and the boys and whoever else has work. I think we should have a community-wide dialogue about what's important to Petersburg transportation-wise. Thank you.
Thanks. And to Dave Kensinger.
I think it's a bad idea. I mean, $40 million is a lot of money. I mean, I've had a couple of proposals in where you could build three ferries for $40 million. They wouldn't be big ferries, but you could have a boat that could essentially go from downtown Petersburg to downtown Juneau round trip. Cost $15 million. But, you know, we can't get any traction to do anything sensible and something that can solve a problem right now. Having a road end where it ends, to my mind, is not a transportation link. It's somebody that had $40 million and they wanted to spend it. And I don't think that's the way government should operate.
Okay, I have a quick follow-up question. This was submitted by a listener, Becky Knight, and it's on the Cake Road project. Let's go back in the opposite direction. And it's specifically on a resolution seeking a public hearing on this project and the permitting. She writes, given the lack of transparency surrounding the so-called Cake Access Project, Would you be willing to support a resolution to provide for a local public hearing with agency officials and Senator Stedman in attendance, and that an environmental impact statement be completed prior to issuance of permitting for the project? Let's throw that back to Dave Kensinger. So a Petersburg Borough resolution seeking those things.
That's a tough one, because I think it's already a done deal. I mean, I don't know what permits are out there that they have to get to complete this road. But I think anytime government spends money, particularly $40 million, you need to talk to people. And I know from what has happened in the history of this project that goes back many years, is there have been quite a few discussions and dialogues with people in CAKE, but very few here. I mean, Federal Highways looked at this project. They looked at it as a transportation corridor. They looked at it as an intertie for a power line. And Federal Highways does not very often not support road projects. But this is one of the few that they said didn't make any sense. So I don't know. I was surprised to see it resurrected after that report came out. And it's still out there. And they spent like $3 million on that report. So they did a lot. What we can do on a local level with the forces at play with this money, I don't know. I think it's going to be a divisive issue, and I don't know whether we'll be able to get anything accomplished by it. But I would support Senator Stedman and DOT coming to town and explaining what their vision is with this road and where they want to see this go in the future, or if this is just a
okay, and to Jeff Mucci, that question to you on a resolution seeking a public hearing on it.
Yeah, why not? I'd like to, you know, we've heard from different borough organizations in CAKE, and there's like three different organizations over there, and some feel strongly about it, some don't care. And I think there's enough questions within Petersburg, you know. I'm not looking to stop the project, but I think people need to kind of chat about what we're doing here. I think it'd be helpful to have Senator Stedman here explain his vision for this. I'd like to hear from somebody who represents CAKE. I'd like to hear from Kuprinoff what their thoughts are, you know, and at least have some discussion on where this road, if it's already a done deal, make it so that Petersburg can use it, as opposed to making it a totally unusable road. Nobody's going to maintain this road. I mean, DOT is not going to get more money to maintain this road. This is just going to be a logging road that'll probably only be used during the peak summer season. So I'd support a resolution just looking for some community dialogue between Kuprinoff, the borough, and the governments of CAKE and Petersburg. Yeah, can't hurt to talk about stuff.
Okay. Question to you, Brandy Tinas.
Frankly, I think we're past that point. I mean, if DOT and Stedman would like to come to town and have a public hearing, that's great. But I think it's already past that point, honestly.
Okay. And Mark Martinson.
Excuse me. Well, newsflash, the road's being built. It's already been surveyed. If you saw a lot of those helicopters that were headed between Petersburg and CAKE this summer, that's what they were doing. They were dragging surveyors back and forth. And the contracts had already been awarded to several big outfits to build the road. So more studies, more of this, more of that, more public hearings. We've had so many over the years. So many studies, so many meetings. I mean, I was over in CAKE meeting with their city council back in the 90s. And it was right. Everybody's about 50-50. It was just like Ketchikan's building a bridge across to the airport. Everybody was about 50-50 for 20-some years. So it's time. Just quit with the studies. Those are so expensive anymore. It takes away from the project. But, you know, to me, $40 million seemed like an awful lot for what's basically going to be a good logging road. And no, it won't be maintained, but And we're already in Cake's backyard. I mean, hundreds of people that don't live in Cake are hunting there. I mean, it's one of the best spots. And they can, they've got the whole north end of Kupnoff. That is their property. They can either let you in or let you in or not. But we are already in their backyard, been there for 20-some years. So a lot of these arguments just are tiresome. Thanks, Joe.
Okay. I think we're going to switch topics here. Brian and I have a couple questions about visitor industry, cruise ships, and such. And Brian will take the next question, and let's have how about Brandy Tinas start with the first answer on this. Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, yeah, as Joe mentioned, we're talking about visitor industry and the cruise ships. And unfortunately, the cruise ship companies canceled their sailings, most of their sailings through Southeast Alaska and their port calls here in Petersburg. And do you think they made the right call in doing that, preventing or stopping their ships from stopping here in Petersburg?
This one's tough. It's a hindsight thing. I think that there was definitely more of a possibility of spread if we were to have boats stop here. It's kind of what weighing out, did we prevent something from coming here, or did we just hurt a bunch of local businesses? No one really knows.
Okay, let's go next to Mark Martinson.
A lot of those ships are controlled by the Coast Guard. And a lot of those problems they had didn't start in Petersburg. It was elsewhere, trying to get through Canada or wherever. It wasn't an easy thing. I was chief engineer on a 165 uncruised boat. It was a nice ship, but what bothered me is, like, you think that they don't put a lot of pollution in the waters, then you're dreaming, because they do. Little ones, big ones. When the big ones started coming here in the late 80s, I was down in Lower Chatham fishing brown king crab, and ship would go by, we started seeing this ooze on our buoy bags. It was going on for a long time. And it's tough to make a good marine sewage system. So, and it's again, it was their decision not to come here. It's nothing we could have done, because it didn't start in Petersburg. It was elsewhere. So it was statewide, all the way up to Cook Inlet. And it was big ships. But that was, again, that was Coast Guard. We really couldn't have done a whole lot about it, but there was a... I remember thinking, fishing is iffy, as we've seen this year. And so is the tourist industry. But think about it, the tree is always going to grow. And it was just a shame to see that industry go away, because I think there was a lot of young families who like to have their guy out there setting chokers right now.
Okay. And question to Dave Kensinger next.
Well, it's pretty hard. I agree with Brandy. It's pretty hard to figure out whether they made the right call or not. But I think what we need to do is we need to look at the future, and we need to do whatever we can to ensure that the community is welcoming to what we predominantly get are small cruise ships in the future. It's a big driver for particularly small businesses here in town, and it's really important. You might not think about it, but it's kind of nice to have a bookstore or a gift shop to buy stuff in, but those folks make a lot of their money in the summer, and they make it off of the tourists, and that enables them to stay open for the rest of the year. So I think we need to put the welcome mat out next year, and I think that would be a really important thing for the Assembly to do. We need to, as Mark says, we need to have a diversified economy. We can't just rely upon fishing or logging or any one particular thing. We need to be looking at other things that we can do to bring people into town and to create things for people to do to be able to make a living. And tourism is going to be a very important one in the mix going forward.
Okay, and to Jeff Mucci, your question.
Well, that's an interesting question because I don't think the cruise ships made the call. I think the communities around Southeast made the call that we weren't really comfortable having them wandering around Main Street. They might have had protocols in place for making sure that there was no viruses, germs being spread. But, I mean, you saw a resolution or an ordinance that we passed several weeks ago about, well, we were going to go to the end of October. Well, you know, the cruise ships wanted into Petersburg. They wanted into the small towns in Southeast Alaska. You know, we need to be able to deal with them. And I don't think we are set up to deal with them, even at this point. I mean, that visitor industry working group has some recommendations that we need to look at this winter because they're going to be pounding on the door next spring wanting to come to Petersburg, and we better have an answer for them. I mean, I don't know. We can't keep throwing mandates at them without a good reason. I think we need to, you know, I think this is an opportunity to have water quality testing in the boat harbors. I mean, hold those guys accountable. I don't think the visitor industry is doing enough for Petersburg. We need to hold them accountable. There's all kinds of organization that could use help in town. And for the visitor industry, the cruise ship industry, to just come in, spend a day or two, and then leave town. They need to buy in. They need to have more buy-in for the community. So I don't think it's the cruise ships that made. I mean, they made a decision not to come here, but that was after a lot of the community had heartburn with having 80 people wandering around Main Street and then going to the next town. So we'll sort it out, but it's a priority over the winter is to sort out what we're going to do next year for the visitor season because they're coming more and more on the shoulder seasons. And they'll be here sooner than we know it. And it's going to be one of my priorities this fall, winter. Thank you.
Kind of sticking on that topic, I'll stick with you, Jeff, on this question. And it's on the Petersburg Economic Development Council. They've released a draft of their visitor industry management plan, it's called, and they're seeking comments on it through next Tuesday. Have you read that, and what are your thoughts on the future of tourism here in Petersburg, and specifically what the borough can do to influence that?
Well, the borough and the PEDC, you know, and the Visitor Industry Working Group, I mean, there's a bunch of people who spend a lot of time trying to sort this stuff out. And, you know, there's a lot of details in that document. But we need to kind of work together as a community to figure out what impacts they're going to have in Petersburg. And this is going to be our opportunity to get it done right. Sometimes it feels like the tourism industry just kind of rolls over the top of us. And, you know, the commercial fishermen are screaming because they can't get down to the drive down dock when they want to. We need to sort it out now as opposed to come next March or April when they're banging on the door wanting to come to Petersburg and see what a great place we live at. And the commercial fishermen are trying to load gear on the drive down dock. I mean, we need to work on it now. And I think we've got some basic framework with the visitor industry working group and the economic development. I mean, if we meld those two things together, I think, you know, we'll make it happen. I mean, and we do need the industry in town. I'm not saying let's not welcome them to town, but let's make sure we welcome them under our rules and not their rules. Thank you.
Thanks. Next to Dave Kensinger, have you read that draft plan and what are your thoughts on the future of tourism in Petersburg?
I think it's got a bright future, and I think the plan is dealing with a lot of the issues that a lot of people had in town, like Jeff mentioned, water quality, drive down dock. All those are something that I think it simply needs to weigh in on. And I think any industry that came into this town is going to have negative impacts and also positive impacts. We just have to make for sure that the positive impacts outweigh the negatives. And I think that what they have done and the work they've done in developing that document and those is something that the assembly definitely needs to take a hard look at this winter and make for sure that we implement a lot of their recommendations by this spring or before this spring.
Okay. Next to Mark Martinson, have you read that draft plan and what are your thoughts about the future of tourism here?
No, I haven't read it. And I don't know a lot about the tourist industry, but other than, like I say, you said, we try to get down to the drive down. Just we're always in our way. You know, we didn't understand it, but the company I used to work for, UnCruise, they had decided not to come to Petersburg 6 months before all this nonsense started. So, and I don't know why. I was hoping to run into one of the guys and say, why aren't you coming here? For whatever reasons, they decided a long time ago they weren't going to stop in Petersburg. And it was, I actually talked them into making more stops 3 or 4 years ago because it's, hey, it's a great town. You know, we had 70 to 80 passengers, depending on how, what boat you were on. But they have a lot of ships, and they have a lot running around up in the Juneau area. It's just, we had that one Safari Quest. That was an uncruised boat that dumped the sewage in there. And it, we had that, actually, it was the boat I was on, anchored out in the Sound. But, you know, I don't mind. I know there's a lot of people depend on it, but like I say, I just don't understand a lot of what goes on other than being on a ship, so I have that perspective, and it's interesting.
Okay, and to Brandy Tinas, question on, have you read that draft plan, and what are your thoughts on the future of tourism?
Yeah, honestly, no, I have not read the draft plan yet. And I think that there is a good future for tourism in this community. I do agree that there needs to be checks and balances, especially with our water quality and the big cruise ships. So fortunately, we don't get them through here, but they still pollute our waters. As well as having some forethought on how to deal with things so that we're not disrupting other industries like the fishing industry by usage of drive down or other facilities that they need and they need access to.
Okay, thanks. Brian, your question next. Let's start off with Dave Kensinger first on this one.
Okay, well, one of your duties on the assembly is to pass a budget. And when it comes time to talking about the 2022 fiscal year budget, what are some departments or programs you might consider cutting in order to balance the budget?
Boy, that's a big question. Basically, I think it's the assembly's responsibility to have the department heads formulate their budget. And then once that has come to the assembly, then we have to decide how much money we have. And it's going to be difficult this year because I'm sure sales tax receipts are going to be down. We know raw fish taxes are going to be down. So what I'd like to see first is the department heads, through guidance from the city manager, they're going to know what their target number is. And based upon that target number, they're going to have to come to us with a budget. And that's when we make the decision. But I think the primary responsibility for the individual departments should lie with the department heads and the city manager. And then once that reaches us, then we take a look at it. And until that happens, I can't say, oh yeah, we need to get rid of this dump truck. We need to get rid of this garbage truck. And yes, we have to cut the library hours X number of hours a week. I want to see the process work its way through before I make a decision on any particular thing.
Next to you, Mark Martinson.
Well, it's going to be a tough year. It could be a tough summer. It's, everything is taking a hit. We need to look at what we can do with the motor pool. I think they have a lot of vehicles that we don't need. Well, we might need, nice to have. The whole recycling program, I was so against it when they started it, because we used to have a nice little recycling program going, take your stuff down to those bins, and if you wanted to recycle, you could. If you didn't, you didn't have to. But we had, in Oregon, we had the same blue cans, and they would pick it up every 2 weeks, and that was plenty. Except Christmas, it would have been nice to have it. But it was the same thing, no glass, clean cardboard. You know, maybe privatize the whole garbage department. The nice thing about that is nobody really has to lose a job. And I think we could do it for 30% of what we're spending now, and we'd have better service. Things like that. I mean, we cannot spend more money. It's just not going to work out. Because I don't mean to say this, don't mean to upset anybody, but every dollar that government spends or takes in is a direct hit on the rest of the economy. So the less government spends, the more is going to be in the community, and the more generation, money generated is going to expand.
Okay. Next to Jeff Mucci on that.
Yeah, thanks. I was having a hard time kind of following that rabbit hole down less money that Burrow spends. I enjoy kind of working on the budget stuff. It's interesting to me. I mean, there are some people on the assembly who really dig into it. And I appreciate, his work on that kind of stuff. What the city manager and city staff has, mostly the city manager, the trouble they have with the borough assembly is it's hard to get direction from us to cut the budget. Most of the time over the last couple of years that I've been involved, and which I hope to be involved on more, is like, let's get together as an assembly and say, hey, we want to see a budget with a 10% reduction across the board. Let's see what that means to the community. Let's see if that has some cuts that we just can't deal with. But without direction from the assembly, the city manager is just going to, and the finance director are just going to present us with the status quo budget, kind of staying the same, staying static, and which we have over the last couple of years. And, I think we need to be more proactive as an assembly, giving direction to the city manager about if we want the budget cut. Nobody wants to cut their favorite program. Nobody wants to cut, I hate to use the library and parks and rec, but they don't want to, those things are important to a lot of people for good reason. And we don't want to cut those things. Some people don't want to cut those things, but it's easy to say, let's cut the budget. But, and I have this conversation with many, many people throughout the spring. It's like, okay, what are you willing to do without? Tell me what you can do without. Well, I haven't really thought about it, but you can cut. Well, help me figure that out. Help me get to where we can cut. Yeah, I look forward to working on it again. It's a challenging exercise for me, and I appreciate the time to do it. Thank you.
Thanks. Brandy Tinas.
When it comes to the budget, I think that we definitely are going to have to be way more fiscally responsible, especially considering that we are not going to have the money coming in that we've seen in the past. I don't want to see raising property taxes. So I'm looking for ways, not just for myself, or not me just looking, but I'd like the department heads and other people to be looking for ways to make their departments more efficient, whether that's cross-training people from one department to another so that you can use them, whether it's looking at each position as you have to fill it and is it absolutely necessary, or what kind of reductions in service that reducing that position would cost. Getting a couple more years out of vehicles. There's a lot of different things that we can do. But we're going to have to basically go through it with a fine tooth comb and figure out ways to reduce it, because we cannot continue to go on like we have, especially considering the financial state that we're in, not only in Petersburg, but statewide and in the nation.
Brandy, let's stay with you. We're just about to wrap up here, and want to give time for any closing statements, for any other information you'd like people to know about you, any issues we haven't covered, and anything else you'd like to address before this October 6th election. Brandy, why don't you take that first?
Gosh, Joe, I don't know. I can't really think of anything off the top of my head. I just hope that people go out and vote. I mean, I know that people are very passionate about things, especially in this current situation that we're in. And so I just encourage everybody to get out and vote.
Okay. Next to Jeff Mucci, closing statement. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I want to thank KFSK and the pilot for giving me the opportunity to change into a clean shirt. It's good to get together and see everybody. I take my role as an assembly member very seriously. Every time I get an email from somebody, I try to always respond as quickly as I can. My phone number is 518 9007, and I encourage people to call me. They call me all the time. I like talking to people. I spend hours and hours researching every decision that I make, and I lose sleep over some of these complex issues that we're dealing with right now. And that's just the way it is being an assembly member in this town. This is a challenging time to make complex decisions. My family is very patient with me. My friends are patient with me. This is not an easy job. I take it really, really seriously. And I spend weeks and hours pouring through the information that I can, trying to make a good decision. And I hope the community supports me again and puts me back in office. I have some good ideas I want to move forward with. And I am always available. Like I said, my phone number is 518-9007, and you have my email address. So please don't be bashful about calling me. You might not like what I have to say, but I'll always be honest with you. Thank you very much for this opportunity, you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Mark Martinson, any closing statements?
Well, I hope people understand that this could very well be a good, tough year and a half. So our hand is forced. We're going to have to cut not just 10%, but maybe more. Otherwise, we're just going to kick the can down the road like government likes to do. And I'm not afraid to cut anything. But that being said, well, thanks to you and Joe, you and Brian. It's been fun.
Thank you. And finally to Dave Kensinger.
Yes, thanks KFSK, Joe, and Brian at the Pilot for putting this on. And thank you for all the excellent reporting both you guys do throughout the year. It's amazing that in a town of our size that we can stay as connected as we are to our borough government. This doesn't happen in most other places, particularly communities of this size and other places in America. Yes, it's going to be a very difficult year, and that's one of the reasons why I'm running. I think it's inevitable that we're going to face a lot more cuts than a lot of us are comfortable with, from reductions that are coming down the pike from the state government. I mean, I've been even hearing rumors from DOT that they're looking at our airport again. I mean, that's a huge thing. We have to be able to keep our community open. We've already lost our ferry system. We have to keep our airport open. I think it's going to be a challenging time for this assembly because we're going to have to be dealing with a lot of issues on multiple fronts. And I think it's going to be really easy if we do not allow ourselves. We have to be very careful about getting into some real divisive battles. And what I'd like to see the assembly focus on this year are the things that we actually can do something about. I know a lot of times we get into these discussions over things that we really can't do a lot about. We can say something about them, and it doesn't, you know, and it's nice to be able to vent and tell people what we think, but it's really not going to influence the outcome of the process. I think we're going to have enough on our plate dealing with the probable budget cuts that we're going to have to deal with this year. And I promise you that if you elect me, I will give my best consideration to everybody that talks to me. I won't always agree with you. You always won't agree with me, but I'll always listen. And I will try my best at all times to try and get us to a consensus position, because I really think that's the best way the government operates.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you very much. Thanks to all the candidates for participating. Thanks to Brian Varela at the Petersburg Pilot. Thanks to all listeners for listening in. Don't forget, Petersburg's election is Tuesday, October 6th. Top two vote-getters out of these four win a three-year term on the Borough Assembly. Absentee in-person voting already underway. It's at the training room of the municipal building, and I hope everyone can get out and vote. For KFSK in Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.